Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, I am Scott Sickles, and you are listening to Gather by the Ghostlight, presenting my play Wheel of Fortune Reversed.
All right, this is Gather by the Ghostlight, original stories for radio theater. I'm Jonathan Cook, your host, producer, and sometimes voice actor on this thing, and welcome back. And to all you out there that have recently left ratings and reviews for this podcast, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. And special shout out to listener Nicole Swanson for your support and your donation at the Buy Me a Coffee link. Thank you so much, Nicole. And also, shout out to the improv comedy troupe Balderdash Academy in New England for becoming our newest monthly members. Thank you so much, you guys. You know, it's been a great day for exciting news, and I know many of you have probably already seen the announcement from earlier, but if you haven't, here's the scoop. In October at Le Chat Noir Theater in Augusta, Georgia, we will be having our first live Gather by the Ghostlight event. That's right. We will be recording a full-length audio play in front of a live audience. You know, the voice actors and Foley effects. It will all be recorded in real time, and you can be there to experience all of it. And as a bonus for all you guys out there that signed up to be monthly members, the event will be completely free for all you guys, just to show how much we love you. So if you're not a member and you want to support as well as get free entry into the live Gather by the Ghostlight event, just head over to buymeacoffee.com/ghostlight and sign up. The event will be Saturday, October 21st, and more info will be revealed as we get closer to showtime. Now, let me tell you about today's story, written by New York-based playwright Scott Sickles. Scott is a member of the Writers Guild of America, and aside from all of his many playwriting accomplishments, he's also won several awards for being a writer on the daytime serial General Hospital. His play that you're about to hear is called Wheel of Fortune Reversed. You're about to meet a man who is transitioning to the afterlife, but before he goes, he has a bucket list that only the Grim Reaper can fulfill. Now, gather around the ghostlight, sit back and enjoy. This is Wheel of Fortune Reversed, and be sure to stick around after the story to hear an interview with this writer and the voice actors.
Whoa! Oh. Hello, you.
I take it I need no introduction.
Do you ever?
Meh, people.
I hear you. Actually, I've been wondering when you'd show up.
Here I am. Are you prepared?
Physically? I don't have much choice. Emotionally, I think I'm good to go.
Very well.
Before you do that, I have a few requests.
Of course you do.
You play chess, right?
Not this again.
Please?
You do know I always win.
Not this time. Ta-da! I've got the board all set up and everything.
Are you some kind of chess prodigy?
Not at all. I'm quite terrible. Which is why I propose we don't play to win. We play to lose.
So if you capture my king,
I die.
And if by some freak chance I capture yours,
I live the rest of my life.
You've already done that.
Then what do you have to lose?
Sure, why not?
Fantastic. Now, I'll mix these up behind my back and we can see who goes first. Left hand or right?
Left.
And naturally, you've picked white. Huh. Has that ever happened before?
About 50-50.
I guess that makes sense. Okay, I guess I go first. Your move. A pawn? Not a knight? You are full of surprises. Alrighty then. Okay, your...
Checkmate.
What?
I mean you.
Wow. You're right.
Now, shall we?
Best of three.
Fine.
Thank you for indulging me.
It's no problem.
I was hoping you'd be cool about it. I mean, you never know what to expect from death, right? Like, you could have been a total dick or just all business. But once the pain stopped, well, it didn't really stop as much as I was okay with it. But once it did, I figured you'd be... Do you know about my life?
Not really.
Huh. I thought you'd know everything.
Why would I need to?
Fair enough.
Why?
It's just... It wasn't great, my life. Not overall. It was very lonely, very angry. When it wasn't sad. And then I went to this fortune teller, and that's the first time I saw you. Harbinger of change. Damn, were you right.
That wasn't me. That was just a card.
I know, but timing is everything. And after I saw you, I landed my dream job. I moved into a place I finally felt at home in. Met the love of my life. Got married. I finally had everything I wanted. I wondered what could happen next. So I went to another fortune teller and...
Did you see me again?
If only. No, I got the tower, the hanged man, and the Wheel of Fortune. All reversed. The first two are always bad news, but the wheel could have been good news, but instead it was like confirmation that there was no hope. I have to admit, I was shook. Of course, it's just superstition, right? Entertainment? Then I got the headaches. Then the scans. I guess when you run out of things to want, you start getting the things you don't. I had to leave my job, moved out of my house into hospice. But love. Love stayed with me. Love eased the agony. Sure, I might not have cared as much about the pain, but I also wouldn't have fought so hard against it. Love is holding my hand right now. I can actually still feel it. The warmth of their grip. It's...
Checkmate.
Exactly. You meant... I win again.
That's the best of three. Sorry. I held out as long as I could.
Thank you. That was kind. Question. In all the chess games over the millennia, has anyone else ever played you to lose?
In all the chess games across all the millennia, do you really think you were the first?
Yeah, I guess the odds were...
I'm messing with you. You totally are.
Really? You're not just saying that?
I'm deaf. Why would I lie?
Awesome! High five! Wait! If we high five, do I like... Is that it?
Well...
We can just high five ourselves?
Sure. I have a question. If you knew the game would end this way, then why?
Honestly? I just wanted to tell people I played chess with death.
You're dying. Who's there to tell?
Folks in the afterlife? There is an afterlife, isn't there?
There is peace.
Like a peace I'll experience and be happy with? Or like an oblivion I'm not aware of because I no longer exist?
Are you afraid of oblivion?
Hell yes! I'm afraid of... Actually, I think what I'm afraid of is being aware of my own oblivion.
Awareness of oblivion isn't oblivion, is it?
True.
What do you want your afterlife to be? Take a moment. Ponder the question. Let it answer itself in your head. Look forward to that.
And that's what'll happen? I get it. You could tell me, but then you'd have to kill me.
Why does it matter?
What? The nothingness? I guess because if there's nothing, after everything everybody has ever gone through, all the love and anger, the good and the bad, if after all the somethings, there's, I don't know. I just hate the idea that the inspirational posters with kittens and rainbows were right about living in the moment.
You didn't live in the moment?
About 50-50. When I did, the moment was either too short or too long. I could never get it right.
Look on the bright side. It doesn't matter anymore.
You don't get invited to many dinner parties, do you?
Invited? No.
I see what you did there.
Any other last requests?
Actually, I have two more bucket list items, but I have to make sure. Okay, so what happens if you kiss me?
Well, you die.
And if you embrace me?
You die.
What happens if I don't die?
You will.
But do I have to?
What are you asking?
Can you kiss me, then embrace me, and then I die?
Oh. Huh.
It's just that I've heard all my life about the kiss of death and the death's cold embrace.
Do you really want a cold embrace?
Honestly, I could use a hug right now, and beggars can't be choosers, so...
Come here.
Thank you. Who knew death was such a gentle kisser?
What?
I don't feel their hand anymore.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. The peace. That's happening.
Well, we should get to the embrace.
Wait. Okay. I'm ready. Bring it in. You're warm.
That's not just me.
What do you... Oh, so that's...
Love. Holding on to you while they let you go.
I didn't think that when I went, I'd be able to feel that. How lucky.
That was Wheel of Fortune Reversed, written by Scott Sickles. It was performed by Robert J. LeBlanc as Michael and Dana Hall as Death. All right, so the gang is all here. With me now is the writer of the story you just heard. He is the winner of 5 WGA awards for his writing of the TV series General Hospital, and he also has 11 Emmy nominations. And he also wrote for the series One Life to Live. And for more than 30 years, his plays have been performed all over the place. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Scott Sickles. How are you, sir?
I am well. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you. And also with us are the two performers from this episode, Robert J. LeBlanc and Dana Hall. Robert J. LeBlanc played Michael in the show, and Dana Hall played Death. How are you guys?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having us.
Glad to be here.
All right. So, Scott, for people that aren't familiar with your work, tell us about your background and your balance of writing for a TV show as well as playwriting. What is the differences between those two formats?
I believe I separate them, but others may disagree because my TV job is a soap opera, and I think I always like to say the big difference between writing plays and writing the soap opera is that a soap opera, you're always only ever writing the middle of anything. Just everything is picking up and leaving off for someone else. And I think the hardest part of playwriting is the middle. So, because that's where, you know, everything is supposed to peak and it so frequently dips. And I think that it helps having a tremendous amount of practice, you know, writing the middle. And it really, I just think that it also helps to, because we're on a very tight deadline, it's a script a week. And so it sort of gets you writing very quickly. So that's that's helped. Insofar as background, wow, it's what's the short answer? I've been writing plays for a very long time. I've been a produced playwright since 1988, I always start off with ticking my identity boxes. It's LGBTQ, neurodivergent, Asian American playwright, and I have my mother was Korean, my father was American of mostly German extraction. If you look at my family history, one of my ancestors almost single-handedly lost the Battle of Gettysburg, and that same ancestor is the reason we have the temporary insanity defense in American law. So that's my stock. I have a difficult an ethnocultural growing up, childhood and whatnot. And in initially writing, a lot of my writing focused on, I focused most of my stories from a gay perspective, a gay male perspective specifically. And it wasn't until 2016, actually, during the presidential campaign season, where I just sort of realized I had to get over my issues with my cultural background and my particular relationship to my mother and our Asianness, and how I, that affected the way I was raised. And, there was a war going on against, identities. And I had to sort of get over that. And I started really embracing, my heritage and writing more about that. And also I was figuring out my neurodivergence, which is ADHD. And then eventually I was able to put that on paper too. I wasn't avoiding that. I just didn't know how to do it. So I hopefully figured that out a bit. And I also have been, I used to write a lot of straightforward comedies and dramas, mostly dramas. And over the past few years, especially because of the pandemic, I wrote more genre pieces. I branched out into sci-fi and speculative pieces, and horror, and even a couple of times fantasy. So that is my kind of writing journey in a very big nutshell.
Yeah, yeah. And Scott, you're one of those writers that has been on like my playwright radar for a while. Like I've been reading a lot of your works the past few months, and then when I came across Wheel of Fortune Reversed, I just knew. Like as I was reading it, I could hear everything going on. I could hear the beach, the waves hitting. I could hear death with this kind of otherworldly voice to the character. So tell us, and also one of my favorite things about this play is you have this unnamed character in it, and it's love. You know, you don't ever say who love is. It could be a spouse. It could be a family member. It could be a really good friend, but just that aspect of it, of how we have this unnamed character, but it was just such a strong connection with Michael. And it's just such a caring moment, especially at the end. It's just very, very wonderful work. I'm curious. I know some of your inspiration obviously came from The Seventh Seal, but what more of the story can you tell us as far as how you wrote it and what your process was with getting it on paper?
So I'm in a few playwriting groups, and one of them has every December we have do something called a Secret Santa title swap, and we each submit a title and get and receive a title from someone else, and I received this title. So this was not a title I came up with. This title was gifted to me by the wonderful playwright Emily McLean. I did not know that until after I had written it, and I had no idea with what to do with it. And I was like trying to do like tarot, mystery, whatever, was watching a lot of noir at the time. And I'm like, should I go like the Val Lewton route here? With a horror story. And then I happened to catch the chess match clip from Seventh Seal, and it all kind of came together. And I was writing it. I thought, okay, well, what if you were playing this chess game with death, but you were in a really good mood and you wanted to play to lose? And it was interesting looking, doing like the little bits of research to like, is that a thing? And it, of course it is a thing, where you play to see who can beat you first. And that was fun. And a lot of it just sort of came to me as I was writing. And because I had a friend who passed away several years ago named Michael McEachran, one of the greatest actors I ever worked with. And he had, especially in his younger years, I knew him in his late 20s and his 30s mostly, he had a very turbulent life. And he was a very emotional person. And then later on in his 40s, he got everything he ever wanted. It was like as Michael's, it's who I've named the character after, Michael in the play. He gets everything that he ever wanted, and then brain cancer, and that's what happened to my friend. And I kind of thought I could memorialize him in this particular way, especially because our last the last conversations we had, which were before his illness really took hold, were very upbeat and really, really lovely. And the sad thing about what happened, I was at his memorial service, and I never got a chance to meet his husband because his husband was in the middle of bar exam preparations, and he was only able to come. He showed up for the memorial service and had to leave. He did not have the time to greet mourners. His schedule was so crushed. And I'm just like, and you know, I'm sure he was not in the mood to socialize at that juncture. And he's not someone I have met since, but that had always struck me. It's just like, can you imagine like this going on in the middle of a crunch and you just barely have time to do anything? So I wanted to, and I don't know what their last days together or last hours together were like, but I wanted this Michael to have the person who was most important to him. And in my mind, it is a spouse, a romantic partner. I am perfectly good with anyone imagining like the, transposing their most important relationship onto this play. And that's how I came to end this particular play.
Our voice actors are here that performed your play, Bob LeBlanc and Dana Hall. So, Bob, you were probably already familiar with Scott's works. You may have already even read this script before I even sent it to you and asked you to perform. Let's get your thoughts on this story and what was it like sort of taking on the character of Michael?
So, having read it and going from a reader reading it as an audience member to an actor performing it was an interesting transition, because it's when I started looking at the character and how he interacted with death in particular, and death's lines going from almost terse and other to more personable. To me, I believed as the actor that death wasn't there. Death was Michael's brain coming to grips with his end. And it was almost as if through the piece, death started to take on Michael's personality a little bit more. Death was a little more open, a little more accepting, a little more goofy, a little more, you know, if you get a chance to play chess with death, you take it. Like that. Kind of, it's the end of his life, but he's not going to let this opportunity pass by. He's still going to enjoy it. That's what I got from the character. So for me, it almost wasn't about death. It was about that realization of him as a person kind of hitting his ultimate. And realizing that, through it all, he might have seen death as the key to his change and success. And he felt that he might have paid for that through some cosmic karmic deal in the middle. But in the end, he always had that love. He always had that tether, that connection. And through that, he gave himself permission to move on. That's what I got as the actor reading the part as the performer for the first time. And it was beautiful because that love could be anything. In the piece, it's obvious that, it, like Scott said, it's obvious it's a romantic partner, but it could be, it could be the entire aspect of love, whether romantic or platonic, or I could even go so far as to picture a puppy sitting next to him in his bed. Like, all of this, it fits. And that's what's so brilliant about it, is the fact that it doesn't matter where you are, what station you're in, or where you are in that road of life, you can still find connection with this character. Yeah, I was blown away. I'm a fan of Scott's to begin with. I like to celebrate people I care about and the work that I care about. Yeah. And Scott, I'm a nerd virgin playwright, so Scott is like a brother to me in that aspect. I always have this, this one beacon of light I can shine, I have shine on myself when I feel like, I don't even know how I'm going to do this. I've been hyper-focusing for 4.5 hours and I'm only 10 pages in. Right? And I go, well, Scott does it.
Yeah.
You know.
Does so, he?
Well, I don't know. But like, to me, it was an ability to celebrate work that I care about from somebody I care about. And that, to me, is important in our community. That's what I'm here for. So, yeah, I loved it.
Yes, and honestly, you played the part so beautifully. I was telling you both of you earlier, I didn't even really have to. I can't even take credit directing this, because basically I just sent you guys a script. I know that both of you guys have awesome recording spaces, and you've both recorded remotely for me before. And I was like, yeah, just do a couple of takes and send them to me. And then like what you guys sent was just like, I was like, man, this is perfect. This is, I have no notes. I don't need retakes. It's all good. So. Yeah, kudos to both of you. So Dana,
I get a text from Dana. We get to play together.
That's awesome.
And
that's
Scott's piece.
That's exactly what I wanted. You know? And the cool thing is that you guys are both playwrights as well. Not only do you voice act, but you're both playwrights. So I just knew that you would find something in this piece that maybe other voice actors wouldn't. And I'm just so glad. And both of you are familiar with Scott's work already, and it was just great. Yeah. So Dana, when I asked you to play the part of Death, what was your approach for this character? And had you already read the script before I asked you to perform it? Is this one of Scott's work you're already familiar with?
You know, this is a piece that I had not read of Scott's, and I was so glad not to. I came into it completely fresh, though when Scott's nod to Bergman is clear, I had a pause. I'm like, I'm gonna need to find my way through this piece. And I want to honor that nod, because that's such an iconic representation, right? And so I started there. And Bergman's an interesting parallel to this piece, because in that particular piece, I think there was a movement of religion versus spiritual nature, and like how you can have that separation of personal church and state, right? So there was this struggle. So I wanted to take the embodiment of the struggle from the Seventh Seal, and the humor in there was highlighted. Of course, Scott does that so well. You know, who can take such an iconic piece and add clever, fresh twists to it? Scott can. You know, it's an iconic trope, and it's like, what is he going to do with it? Of course, he fills it with subtext, this gentle humor that doesn't take you out of the piece, but brings you in deeper. And this honest dialogue, I know Scott was saying before with his experiences working for television that he's in the middle of dialogue a lot, and he does the middle so well. But I disagree in that this piece is a fully realized story, and that gift for authentic dialogue comes right through, and the universal themes of love are right there. So taking on Death, I had to create Michael's world in my mind. And I went to a hospital room. I went to a man in a bed, perhaps, where his family or a loved one is seated nearby. And just that image and that emotionality, just let that fill me to meet Michael, to show up for him. I had to know where he was. And I think this is so powerful because it's so subtle. And this piece doesn't hit you over the head. It's not performative. It's not overt. It's very subtle. And yeah. As death, you come to meet Michael. Whatever you want to put on death as your own interpretation, Scott doesn't hit you over the head with a pretext and say, this is what it is, or yeah. this is what the afterlife is. And I love that so much. And I love that we meet someone in transition, because that is so powerful for those of us that perhaps have had the experience of sitting with one in their passing. What comes to me with that is the beauty of the transition and the work of death. I imagine family holding his hand, but not knowing the journey that Michael's on. Yeah. And Scott lets us see a world that opens us up to the possibility that not only is there more, but it doesn't have to be scary. I didn't feel afraid.
Yeah.
I loved that about the piece. And I loved, as Bob said, for me, I felt like death is what death is for that moment when we meet them. Whatever we put on that, death has so much to do. Death is a busy yeah. entity, but yeah. but is betrothed to Michael in a way that is interesting. Michael gives death a challenge almost. And whether it's Michael is death and it's this breakdown of who he is as he's passing, or if death is a separate entity, we get to see the journey that they go on together. Yeah. And it's really beautiful. And I loved, for me, I felt like they were initially, as death, distant or indifferent, and like they had a job to do. But then they began to assume more of the connection with Michael. And I felt more of a mirror reflecting his existence back to him. And yeah. ultimately, I found it very beautiful that death was ultimately a source of solace for him. Mm. And the messaging there, that in the end, nothing else matters. Love yeah. becomes our sole possession. And if we're like Michael, fortunate enough, perhaps in our final moments, we can feel it too. And yeah. I found that so beautiful and hopeful.
Nice. I love what mm-hmm. you said about how Michael was never afraid. You know, he just kind of, he yeah. took it in, you know, the words, bring it in, come in and embrace me. That was just like, he was accepting yeah. what was happening. It's such a good transition moment. So Scott, you actually heard this story. You kind of heard an early rough cut of it before it got released. How did you feel about these two wonderful actors here that told your story?
Oh, my knee-jerk joke to that question would be, I have notes, but I have no notes. I was so thrilled because I've seen both of, I'm very familiar with their work as actors and their work as writers. I initially thought when you told me who you cast, I was like, yay. And I thought, you know, because Bob has this beautiful, mellifluous voice, I thought Bob was going to be death. And I've seen Dana do like primarily very down to earth things. So I thought that was, and then when I was sort of adjusting it for audio, I just kept hearing it the other way around. So I sent you that text. I'm like, what if it's this way? And you're like, oh, I already did it that way. I'm like, great minds. But I was not actually expecting the reverberation in Death's voice. So that was, that took me by surprise. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. And it gave Dana's voice a very different quality than what I'm used to hearing. And to hear Bob be just so sort of like jocular and conversational, because you have that beautiful DJ voice, and I just love it. And Bob did another reading of a 10-minute play of mine called Hibernation a year or so ago. Yeah. I was Yeah. And I love that. I watch it from time to time still. I really love that so much. So, and again, like, I was so thrilled with the casting too, because like Bob is like my brother in ADHD. like, you know, like our brains are doing horrible things to us. And I'm like, ah, solidarity, brother.
Yeah.
So, Dana, I've had lots of like discussions about like the playwrights forum that they run and writing in general. And it's just been, it's really great to sort of like have long distance friends suddenly be plopped into your project that, that, you know, especially something like this where I wrote it as a prompt and it became so personal. And to have this to have them represent it so well, and it moves me right now to hear how much thought each of you put into it, because I can see that I think you have each put more thought into this play than I have. so that's always, and I love it when I go to like rehearsals or a production meeting, and just like, yeah, clearly I'm the least informed person about the play that I wrote.
I love about playwriting. That.
Thank you. Yeah, you know? it just moves me so much to hear not only your regard for the piece and my writing in general, but it just just that you thought so much about it, and that the piece itself inspired so much thought. It makes me feel I did something right. So that's a good feeling to have.
Well, you certainly did. You certainly did. I want to touch on Dana and Bob. You were recently on the wonderful Rachel Feeney Williams. You were on her panelist podcast,
yeah.
And she asked you a great question, which I want to steal it from her right now and just kind of paraphrase what you mentioned. But she asked you what theater means to you, and I kind of want you to kind of give us the answer that you gave her. And Scott, that's going to come up for you next. What does theater mean to you? So Bob, what does theater mean to you?
This falls right into exactly what Scott was talking about. For me, it is collaboration. It is it's one of the few collaborative art forms that exists in true raw fashion, where you can take your work and pass it on to somebody else and find the meaning that you didn't know you wrote. You know, I find meaning in my work through other people's eyes. Because I'm so close to it, I know it's a tree. I'm not sure we're actually in a forest. And I want my director to spend more time thinking about the show as a whole than I did writing it. My actors are going to spend more time with my characters than I did, especially if they're memorizing the lines. I didn't have to do that. I just had to make sure they were speech, like you could verbally say them. So for me, theater is all about that collaboration. And at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is what the audience gets out of it. And that is going to change every show, every night, for every person. You could have 100 people in that room, and every single one would be walking out with a different meaning to your show. That's what theater is about.
Awesome. All right, Dana, what does theater mean to you?
Yeah, so I wish there was just one thing I could isolate as to what the theater is or means, but I love the concept of a social narrative, and that we all have a story to tell. And the beauty of theater is that these stories get to be materialized. And unfortunately, we need greater representation of stories and inclusivity so that we can all be in this binder of what makes society what it is, especially right now. It's so important. So I love the idea of theater being a living, breathing entity that we have a friendship with throughout our life, whether that's through creating it, watching it, interacting with it. I just love that about theater, to be moved by something outside of yourself and come to a greater understanding. So theater is, not to be, you know, cheesy, but theater is life. It's the living, breathing representation of who we are. And for me, theater has helped me to understand myself and others in a way that I never would have been able to.
I like it. All right, Scott, They've answered that question before, so they already kind of knew what they wanted to say. So what is theater?
Yeah. Yes. I actually was going to say to me, theater is life, but I guess I'm not going to say that now.
Football is life.
Yes. I was also going to say it's like theater. Theater is collaboration, but you know, like they have all the best dancers and I get to go third. It's a hobby. Theater, I mean, it's like one of the most challenging and wonderful forms of expression for the reasons that have been mentioned. I mean, I was a movie buff growing up since I was a kid. I wanted to write screenplays, and then I kind of learned what that entailed and how that usually turns out. And then I kind of sort of out of necessity fell in love with theater because it's like I could tell the stories I wanted to tell and like actually do them, and people could see them and I could share them, and then they could go on and, you know, and affect people however they did, and everyone having that individual experience. And as such, it's such a broad question. I've always approached things. One of the first things I learned about playwriting is that, you know, you can do anything on stage. And then I wrote plays that had, especially full lengths, that had a very cinematic flow with, you know, shorter scenes that just kind of ran into each other that you could do on a bare stage. And the response I got was, well, not that. You need to set it in a living room. And I'm just like, except I don't. So there's a whole lot there. And there's... and there is a great sense of community, especially in community and collaboration, especially in rehearsal. I think rehearsal is just the best thing ever. As a playwright, I think for me, playwriting is, and writing in general, but playwriting is mischaracterized as something that is solitary, because I mean, you know, when you are dealing with all of these characters and all of these voices, and then they won't leave you alone. It really is just like, you know, so I wish it were solitary sometimes. So, I mean, there is a sense of community not to sound completely insane, but it's both very, very real. And also it exists in the imagination. It goes back to reality. So there's this sort of like bizarre circle of life and creation there that theater gets to provide, and you get to be in the room with it, which I think is the best. It's just wonderful.
Very, very good. All right. So, I mean, I guess I'll answer that too. So theater to me is it's an escape for me, really. I mean, real life is hard, and, you know, I do a lot of stage acting, and just being able to escape into a character that's not me, you know, to be able to take on someone else, and even writing characters for a play, just a way to escape real life. And just every character I write has a little piece of me in it, no matter if it's a guy or a girl, if they're straight or gay, it doesn't matter. There's a piece of me in every character I write. And like I said, it's a way of just, I don't know, escaping reality and just creating my own world. That's kind of what theater is to me. And also when you write a play, you know, every theater does it differently. You know, they all have different actors. They all have different directors. I mean, it's like going to parallel universes and seeing different versions of your story. We playwrights were doing that before the MCU were. We had the multiverse first, just so everyone knows. So that's kind of what theater is to me. And credit to Rachel Feeney-Williams with her podcast, Theatrical Shenanigans. She has this new... the first episode's out so far, but she gets a panelist of playwrights, and she asks questions just like this, which are very insightful, especially for writers out there that want to listen to that. So yeah, no, that's great. And so Scott, you have a lot going on. Well, what do you have coming up that you want to tell people out that you can promote right now?
Yeah, certainly no TV shows. We are on strike. Oy. But I do have, I'm very pleased about this. Wim Productions in Kevin King's production company in Kansas City, Missouri is doing my play, Playing on the Periphery, Monologues and Scenes for and About Queer Kids. And I'm very proud of that piece because it was during lockdown. I wrote this monologue about a little girl who is forced to wear a pretty dress at a tea party with other little girls in pretty dresses, and she does. It is the last place she wants to be. She would rather be hunting for tadpoles with her friend Zoe. And she is complaining about this to her very good, very fastidious friend, Bertram. And they are like about to start the third grade. And he already knows like the histories of the teas they are serving at the party. So you can see the writing on the wall. And this one monologue became a series of four monologues about each of the characters, those three that I mentioned and Bertram's friend, Robert. Those became a series of four monologues. And then the two boys had a scene together, the two girls have a scene together, and then they all have a play together that's especially fun called When in the Course of Human Events, when they're all figuring out different games to play before watching fireworks on the 4th of July. And it's just about these LGBTQ third graders who really don't know that about themselves. They just know who they care about and how they feel. I wanted to write that because it's the thing that I wish I had when I was in the third grade. And I remember I chose the third grade because that's when I had my first like big monumental crush. So I had that and I wrote that, and that is it's been parts of it have been performed in Florida. So in Don't Say Gay Florida, and I had a full reading in Reading, Pennsylvania, which is very much a Republican region. So that's being done now in Kansas City, Missouri, which is also, I think, a little blue speck in a big red state. So I'm very pleased about that. That's happening in August.
Awesome. Very nice. And where can people find you? What's your website? And are you active on any social media out there?
I am active on Facebook. I think Instagram is also a good place to find me. And I have a playwright and a regular account on Facebook. I'm also on the New Play Exchange, and my website's, which I don't update nearly often enough, is just www.scottcsickles.com.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you all for joining in. Scott, you know, keep creating, keep writing, keep doing all that cool stuff. And really hope to have you back on in the future. And Dana and Bob, you're both writers. I'm definitely going to collaborate with you guys again, as well as probably more. I'm going to probably reach out to you for more voice acting gigs, too. So, all of you, just keep doing all the cool things you do. And I can't wait to work with all you guys again.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you all for listening. And if you are associated with a theater and you would like to produce the play you heard today on your stage, send an email to gatheredbytheghostlight@gmail.com or contact the playwright directly at his website, scottcsickles.com. And if you'd like to have some cool Gathered by the Ghostlight merchandise, t-shirts are available in the merchandise link in the show notes and the Year 1 and Year 2 books, which are both also available at Amazon. Intro and outro music, as always, is provided by artist JK47. And if you enjoy this podcast, maybe you're a longtime listener, or maybe this is the first episode you've ever heard, let us know. Please leave us a rating or a review in all the places that you can. And also, be sure to follow Gathered by the Ghostlight on social media, and you can stay up to date on new episodes. I'm Jonathan Cook, and as always, stay safe, and I'll see you next time we gather by the Ghostlight.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.